Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle. And we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, welcome back everybody to the Side Hustle City podcast. Kyle Stevie is in the house today.
Yep, two out of three. Well, you sprung the last one on me. Like I got 15
minutes. It was like a last minute.
Yeah, I got 15 minutes to get here. I was like, that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, Kyle still works that 9-to-5 world. So Kyle comes from that perspective. And, you know, when guys like you come on, Ben, who's a, you know, side hustler, you know, you've turned into a side hustler, fractional CFO. You know, he's like, what does that mean for normal people who have no idea what that might be?
No, seriously, like, sure as shit. That's what I, as soon as he said, my thing's fractional ownership. I was like, what the hell is he talking about?
So Kyle's actually writing a book on tokenization, which is, you know, breaking up ownership shares of pretty much anything into possibly millions of units.
But my focus is on REITs and the other real estate investment vehicles.
Yeah. Well, Ben's here to tell us a little bit about fractional work. Like, how do I take my skills? How do I take my experience as maybe a CFO of a Kroger or a P&G or whatever, or maybe not even as big a company as that? Maybe it's a small manufacturing company. How do I take that experience and freelance that?
Right. It's really interesting that you compare it to that tokenization that's going on with NFTs and everything else now. I actually had not heard it compared to that. So it's interesting to like tokenize myself, you know, or my C-level role. So yeah, I mean, I wrote this book, Fractional Leadership, Lending Executive Talent. You thought was out of reach. What the heck is fractional, right? What does that even mean? You know, so the idea is sort of simple. You have people that are very experienced as a CFO, CMO, CIO, one of these C-level roles, and they, you know, and somebody needs an experienced, been there, done that executive, but they can't afford to pay the $250,000, $300,000. It doesn't make sense for the size of their company or where they're up to yet. They need that experience. They don't want like a beginner who's like figuring this out on YouTube, how to do whatever it is that you're doing. But they can't, you know, it doesn't make any sense, or they couldn't afford anyway. Somebody like you full time, so they can get you for a fraction of your time. They can get you for the fraction of the money. Now, relative on an hourly basis, it's a lot more than you would make at a full time job, or that you would make if you were charging by the hour. But it's you know, allows you to be CFO, CMO, COO, CIO, CTO, etc., for multiple companies, a fraction of your time each. But you're still the C-level role. You're responsible for sales, marketing, whatever it is, head of sales, COO, CMO, CFO. You're responsible for that function of the company. You're just not doing it full time. You know, as a CMO, you might have fractional CMOs sometimes have 6 or 7 full-time marketing, you know, kind of reps or tactical people doing work, graphic designers, social media people, et cetera, working under them. And they set up systems, they set up messaging, and manage them part-time. And that way you have like a, you know, been there, done that, a very serious, high-level, high-caliber CMO, and you can have them for, you know, for a fraction of what it would cost to do it full-time. And plus it's an expense. You don't have the employee aspect of it as well, so that simplifies things. So I don't know whether you guys want to focus on that from the side hustle perspective of, you know, someone with a full-time job doing that for other people as a C-level role, fractional leader, or you want to focus on it as, you know, people in your audience who can use fractional leaders in their businesses, not to have to, you know, to get high caliber people without full-time.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that word fractional, right? It's a fraction of the time and a fraction of the money for a much, much higher level of experience than you'd be able to get if you tried to hire that person full-time, which often you can't do anyway.
He said focus. Like, you've obviously not listened to any of the episodes yet. There is no focus. This is a meandering stream of consciousness that goes on this podcast. So where you take us on the wherever you want to go, and we'll just ask questions.
Yeah. Well, let me say this. So I didn't even know what fractional CMO was until, you know, until we started our company. And it made a lot of sense because, you know, like you just said, there's people out there. I mean, I could hire some kid out of college, maybe. And maybe if I've got a startup, I could maybe afford to hire somebody.
You or your partner could figure it out. Google it.
Maybe. But finance isn't necessarily the thing you want to screw up. Right. Like if you tell your investors, hey, this is what we think we're going to make in 3 years, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's something that you kind of have to like, it's set in stone once it's set. Right. A lot of other stuff, your marketing, everything else. That's all like I can adjust that as I go along. I can, as I learn, I can change things. Right.
Yeah, that overhead's hard to, that overhead's hard to like get rid of.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't want to be Enron. So like you need,
and the other thing is it's good for your investors too. Like also it's also some of the gravitas that it adds for you too.
Yes.
Because if you have as the CFO on your leadership team, somebody that, you know, I forgot the companies you mentioned as examples, like, you know, they've been at P&G or, you know, Blockbuster 20 years ago or whatever, then that's like, whoa, you know, they got a real CFO on their team, and it, you know, they have, might have relationships. That's a lot of time these fractional leaders can bring to the table. So there's definitely a lot of other benefits too, in terms of gravitas, relationships, introductions, that having someone much more experienced than maybe you and your co-founders, is a huge value you could bring on, you know, without, again, having to hire them.
That's a great point. That is a really good point, because a lot of times, and I've looked at a ton of deals as an investor, and I've also presented as a startup several times, and you generally have like a designer on your team. You have a guy that's a marketer. It might even be the designer. You know, you probably have some sort of tech person on your team. Right. That guy's pretty important, right? But a lot of startups, like, you don't even get off the ground unless you got a tech co-founder, right? And, or you might, you know.
And even them, they're like a coder, like, they haven't been a CTO at a major organization before. You're calling them CTO because you're a startup and everyone, and C-level roles are getting handed out like candy, but it's, you know.
It's just like anybody can be a C-level whatever anymore. But, you know.
Like, I'm a coder and I'm in a startup, so I'm a CTO.
Yeah, well, but you guys are the founders and you might not be that experienced. Right. And you need to go find somebody, especially when it comes to the money, because I'm giving you money. I want to know that there's somebody reputable handling my investment, right? So I could bring on that leadership. I could bring on that experience in a micro way versus having to hire somebody like that. Plus, I don't have to give up equity.
Well, that's the thing. Like, people like in my position that think of startups that don't have any experience with it. It's the most experience that we have is watching Shark Tank. And they never, and on Shark Tank, it's all about the product, but they never really talk about the team behind the guys.
Right.
They never
That's what people care about.
Right. So all the startup stuff that we've been to since I've known you, Adam's changed my life for the better. I've gotten to get into this entrepreneurial circle. They name drop as quickly as they can. We've got this person on our team. He's done this. He was working with this guy. He's working with that guy. We got this guy on the team, and it lends a semblance of credibility to investors that aren't very comfortable maybe with a certain area of, let's say, blockchain stuff. Most guys are not comfortable with that, but if they know that such and such is working as he's not a CTO, but he's an advisor is the big thing, particularly on the website. So if he's the advisor,
make sure it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you go to his LinkedIn thing, you look at it, you're like, oh, he wasn't lying. This guy is ultra successful. Okay. Now I feel more comfortable because he wouldn't be involved in this startup unless he thought that it had traction.
That's it. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, wouldn't H&R Block be fractional? I mean, for your own personal taxes, you're outsourcing that already, right? Yeah.
I actually use that analogy in my book, again, Fractional Leadership. I use that analogy. It's like, you know, fractional leadership, fractional C-level people on your team, because the target market of the book is really the business owners. So it sounds really strange, like if you're not very familiar with it or if you're only newly familiar with it. But yeah, I actually give that analogy, is that your accountant, your lawyer, in a way, are like your fractional, you know, you're trusting people to give you serious you know, financial advice or serious legal advice, sharing the guts, opening the kimono about your, you know, whatever you're doing with your lawyer, and, you know, and getting their guidance. So in a way, yes, there's an aspect of fractional leadership there. The difference with those kind of roles though, lawyers, accountants, even consultants or advisors, is that fractional leadership, fractional C-level roles, fractional executives are people who take an accountable role in your organization. Because a C-suite role is accountable. If I'm your CMO, I'm actually accountable to make sure success and numbers and managing a team, I'm accountable to make that happen. If I'm the head of sales fractionally, I'm accountable for your sales results. From the COO, et cetera, I'm kind of over the whole company. So that's really the big difference in a fractional leadership role as opposed to some of these other type of things. Your account's not, they're responsible to do their job, but they're not responsible to manage your finances for you. Yeah. So still have to do.
Yeah.
So fraction, for the people that don't understand this, like me, the,
I apologize if I'm skipping, anything, please.
You're fine. So if you get a fractional CFO, he's actually getting paid by the company based off performance, or do they, most of them take a salary plus performance, not salary so much as
typically people are either charging a retainer for certain accountabilities, meaning like I'll manage your finance. Let's say you have a couple of bookkeepers or a controller in-house or another outsourced company. So I'll manage them and that and give you financial advice. Look, sit with you, go over reports, help you strategize, do CFO stuff and, or help you prepare for, your pitches to your investors or whatnot. And of course, you want to look at a CFO who has experience doing that, obviously, if that's what you're asking them to do. But they'll typically have some sort of retainer in exchange for certain specified accountabilities. It's, that's their job description, basically. Something that's fitting to the amount of time they expect to put in with you. There are some who do hourly, so you'll just pay them by the hour. They charge $150, $200, $250 an hour, whatever it is they charge. And so some of them do that. That's typically how it'll work. There is a minority. I do know some who will take like a startup with no money and, who will, do either for... Usually it'll be for a reduced rate. Let's say they'll take half of their, whatever their fee is. Let's say they'll take half of it in cash and half of it in equity based on whatever valuation the founders are setting at that point. You do have some that do that. And you have some, really if they believe in you that, might just do it for sweat equity or grunt points or whatever, like it calls it in that book. But you do have those options.
That's interesting. So talk a little bit about the book and the way it's structured and what you kind of go over and what inspired you to do the book?
Yeah. So great question. So maybe I'll go back a little bit about myself and then
yeah, there you go.
Book, transition into the book from there. Basically I came from a very winding road and lived several lives. But one of my more recent lives was as a corporate restructuring, a bankruptcy attorney at one of the major firms in New York City. And after doing that for 5 years, I joined a healthcare startup. Very tech focused, very idealistic. And I was the first full-time employee, even before the founder. And kind of strange how I ended up in that position, but suffice it to say, I was there and I got the opportunity to build most of the operations of this company. And as you could guess from the fact that I had a legal background, I had no background in like starting companies or running businesses. And so I just had to figure it out like any startup. So, I figured stuff out, learned a tremendous, tremendous amount. That organization, we actually grew to the largest organization of its type. I don't want to give the numbers here on the air, but largest organization of its type in the state of New York and over 130 people, just to give you an idea of the size by the time I left and zero revenue when I started. So, and it was founder funded, right? So there was no fundraising Series A or anything like that.
Congratulations on that. That's difficult.
Yeah. Thank you.
Almost impossible, I would say.
Founder was, extremely, extremely smart guy.
Depends on how funded your founder is prior.
Yeah. What family they come from.
Yeah, no, it's actually, he actually came from a relatively poor family. It's just that he's so smart. He had another job and he ended up negotiating in a prior job that he came to before he founded the company. He negotiated like a commission-based thing based on how he grew that company.
Oh, okay.
And so,
Like a 1031 exchange.
Yeah.
you take you take your company and roll all your equity and everything into the your company that you're gonna be the owner of.
He didn't have equity there, but he made a tidy sum from the amount that he built that company. He earned commissions basically and was able to use that funding to fund his startup. Anyway, so point being, though, that we grew this company. So I was there, you know, obviously when we're one person, five people, 50 people, 100 people, and kind of seeing the challenges that we faced at those various stages. Like, I'll give a couple examples. I mean, any, you know, people who started companies can relate to, you know, or we're in startups can relate to. I mean, you know, one thing I'll just give the marketing example, right, is that we, you know, we were doing subway billboards, doing all kinds of marketing in New York City. And we, you know, again, we're figuring this out. He's very, you know, founder's very smart. And so we're effective at marketing, but it was impossible to figure out like how to even attribute, like which marketing things are working, which ones are not working as much. So how do you do that? It's not simple because, you know, let's say somebody sees our subway ad, somebody sees our bus ad, somebody sees a billboard, and then they're like, oh, you know what? I remember that after three times. I mean, oh, you know, let's call that company, and they Google us, and oh, you know, our Google AdWords pops up on top. So they click on the Google AdWords. Oh, look, we got a, you know, it's a PPC, you know, attributable ad from Google, you know, pay-per-click. And that's not really where it came from. I mean, if we were at the top of the list on organic, and they could have just as easily found us on organic, but just because we had PPC, you know, it looks like a Google lead. So if you have an experienced CMO, like, this is not news. Like, they're used to dealing with these kind of attribution issues, so you can make smart marketing decisions when you're paying tens of thousands of dollars a month on marketing. So, you know, but we didn't know how to do that.
If I'm spending money, I mean, I own a marketing agency too.
And the wheel.
Yeah, if I'm spending money, I want to know where I'm spending money and what is effective.
Agencies, we try consultants. Like, it just,
there's a saying in marketing, 50% of my marketing dollars are wasted. I just don't know which 50%.
Right. It's just kind of hard to make that actionable data, right? But I didn't hear that expression, but it's a great point. That's just one example. Another one is, like, you know, we're building the company, we got teams here, right? So everybody is so underwater whenever we're hiring people in any of our teams. So we end up just throwing them into just shadowing under other people. There's no documented processes. There's no documented or followed or separate team members doing like a training program. So everybody's just thrown in. And, you know, look, there was a lot of good morale among the starting people, who, like the first 10, 20, 30 people in the company. But then, like, you know, as it got bigger, the newer people we saw, and we started taking surveys, and we just saw a lot lower level of happiness among the newer people, especially in their first 90 days. And, you know, it's not good. It's not a problem you want to have long term. Like, well, you don't die from it. Every company has issues. But, you know, again, we just, you know, none of us had done this before. We're all doing this for the very first time. And if we had, you know, if we had somebody experienced on the team, but like, how do you trust somebody? How do you find the right person? So just a couple of examples. I didn't really learn the solution to this till later on, because after I left the company, I hung up my shingle as a fractional COO. What we call in the world of EOS, entrepreneurial operating system.
Hang up the shingle.
What's that?
The hang up the shingle. You ever heard that before?
Yeah.
That's a universal, at least I don't know about marketing, but it's a universal law lingo. Like, he's from New York, I'm in Kentucky, an Ohio bar. That's what you always say, hanging up a shingle.
Oh, okay. So that's a law thing. Is that where that comes from?
Yeah, it comes from.
Oh, is that because of law? Is that where I got that?
Yeah, that's where you got it.
I thought that was like a universal term. All right.
Now, I'm going to claim it as law, so I sound like I know what I'm talking about right now. It may be universal. Nice.
Okay, he never gets to use his law degree, so any chance he gets to throw some law stuff in there, he does.
That's all I got.
Yeah. Don't ask me. You could be a fractional legal consultant.
I want no part of that.
I haven't practiced law in what, like 7 years, and I, you know, I'm very happy about that. But I still keep up my bar admission because, I don't know, I did all that work. I'm not giving it up.
Yeah,
I sure as hell did. As soon as I have to pay dues, but I don't have to do CLEs, and I don't have to.
Oh,
pay
you
dues.
Did that kind of inactive retirement thing? I think they call it.
Yeah, like, it made no sense. I wasn't using it, so I was like,
"Well, now you can." What are you talking about? Read his book. You could just make an extra. Let's talk about money.
I've been offered two corporate counsel positions.
I love it.
And I refused them because I didn't want to screw their company up.
Well, Kyle also works at like the fastest growing logistics company in America or something like that, TQL. Like, it's crazy. Wow. Like, the guy came out of nowhere that started it and became the richest person in Cincinnati in what, like 10 years maybe?
15.
Yeah,
he's it was fast.
Billion plus dollars net without worth
having,
probably.
Without having like the... who owns United Dairy Farmers in Great America?
The Lindners.
Yeah, without having Lindner backing or anything like that, he just did it on his own.
Yeah, just did it on his own, scrapped it out, you know? And Cincinnati's kind of like the logistics capital. Well,
when
of
you're
America.
Talking about your startup, how you guys had the 30 core people and everybody was pretty much in it to win it. And then you get the guys that were the second generation, so to speak, and they weren't quite as bought in. It reminded me of this as our startup part of it.
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, you can't, I mean, unless you want to just not grow, like, you have to do things differently when you get bigger, you know, it's just a reality. But if you have people who, you know, if you could bring in people even fractionally who have done it at that bigger scale, you don't have to reinvent the wheel because, you know, and you might not be able to afford them full time, but you could still have the benefit of their been there, done that, of their experience. So I kind of discovered that I did a lot of been there, done that just from all that experimentation with that startup. And then I started doing fractional COO at all these other companies. I started a podcast, Win-Win Entrepreneurial Community, and connected with all these people in the EOS world, the Entrepreneurial Operating System community. That's a whole another community. And I came in touch with not just myself, obviously as a fractional integrator, fractional COO, but I started meeting all these other people that do this. And not just fractional COOs, but CMOs, CFOs, other people, CTOs, and heads of sales, you know, sales managers who do this fractionally. And I'm just like, you know, I just started to realize that this is like a whole industry. There's thousands of people who do this. There's firms that have over 100 people in it that do it. There's a ton of solo practitioners that do it. A lot of people do it as side hustles. And, you know, while they have other jobs or they're solo practitioners or whatever. And it's like this whole industry, and there was not a single book for business owners on like, what is fractional executive leadership? How does it work? Is it right for you? What kind do you need? How do you find somebody? How does fractional CMO work? How does fractional, you know, head of sales work? How does fractional COO work, et cetera? There's just nothing. And there's like, all there is thousands of websites from all the different solos and all the different firms. And that's it. It's just like this completely diffuse industry, you know, and everybody calls things by different names. Some call it an outsourced CFO. Others call it a fractional CFO. Others call it CFO as a service, on and on and on with all the different roles. Nobody would even know what to Google if you want to find somebody or if you want to learn about this. So anyway, this is kind of like the diffuse lack of any center of gravity that I found the industry in. I was just like, well, you know what? I'm not the most experienced. I only got into this in the last few years. But let me start to create a center of gravity. Let me write the book. The first book on fractional leadership is what I wrote, you know, came out a couple months ago. Fractional Leadership, Landing Executive Talent You Thought Was Out of Reach. Again, first book for business owners that just says, the first chapter is, what the heck is fractional leadership? Just like you guys asked, because, you know, a lot of people don't know the term or whatever. Maybe you come up with some other term for it, but this just explains, what is it? You know, what does it do for you? How do you know if it even is for you or not? Maybe it's not even a fit for you. And if you do want to do it, how do you find the right person? How do you set up an engagement for success? How does it work? How much does it cost? So I just set out very nuts and bolts with lots of stories to just explain all that. So, you know, again, obviously encourage people to read the book, Fractional Leadership, but that's why I wrote the book. I created a company to go with it because I was like, well, you know, people could learn a lot about fractional leadership. Maybe they're interested in it, either as becoming a fractional leader or getting more business as a fractional leader or as a business owner.
What's the website for that business?
It's fractionalleadership.io, not .com.io, fractionalleadership.io. So what I put there on that website is a fractional leader platform. I basically set up a process, you know, because again, I built companies, right? I like process. So I set up a process, a team to vet fractional leaders and check their references independently, to profile them, to interview them, check out their core values, and then match them with business owners. So business owners looking for somebody, again, you could look through those thousands of websites. That's the challenge, right? That's why I did this vetted fractional leader referral platform, fractionalleadership.io, because you could, you know, you could Google it. You just don't know what you're getting. Like if you know somebody who uses a fractional CFO, then you can use that fractional CFO. That could be great. But a lot of people don't know anybody that have successfully used somebody before. And so how do you know what you're getting, or if they have the right industry experience that you need, or maybe I need to prepare a pitch for a fundraising thing. Have they done that before? So that's a lot of very, very manual work with a notepad or with a lot of phone calls and kissing a lot of frogs that don't end up being princes. And so I just try to like save people the time by saying, hey, I vetted all these people. Tell me what you're looking for, or tell the platform what you're looking for. And we'll make within 2 business days, a vetted fractional leader referral, 2 to 3 that actually have the industry experience you need, that are within your budget, and that we've vetted to be, you know, that have actual customers that we've independently talked to that are happy with them. So hopefully you could just talk to those 2 or 3. Hopefully those will be your finalists, and you could just make the process easier for yourself. Again, talking from the business owner side, but it also lets you at the website apply to join the network as a fractional leader.
I love it. Have you ever considered going to one of the accelerator programs? And I'm sure we've got one here called Centrifuge, and they're kind of the ground zero for anyone who wants to get a startup off the ground. So you've got those guys, but then you've got all the accelerator programs, the angel investors, the VCs, they're all a part of that. So, you know, the Centrifuge group.
That's a great question.
Yeah. So their Centrifuge group, they're kind of like the ringleader, and they're the ones who will connect you to money. They'll connect you to a team member, team members that you need, and they also connect you to space. So they have a little co-working space, kind of like we do over here in the Kentucky version of that. But in Cincinnati, they're the place to go. Have you ever considered maybe going to one of those places? Since you are so well networked in this world, I feel like you could really benefit a group like that. Because they're out here, they don't know where to find all these people. And a lot of times there are C-level folks that are running these things, but they don't have that extensive network of fractional folks that you would have.
Or they don't understand how to make it as an asset.
And there's no process.
Yeah, they're used to you hire one person to do the job.
These are all P&G people down here. These are all like Kroger, P&G, you know, Western Southern Life people. Yeah,
they're not used to quite the struggle that it takes as an entrepreneur from getting the first friends and family and trying to make it happen.
Well, they do a hell of a job, right? But the thing is a lot of the people, the consultants that they'll connect you with are guys that, you know, if I wanted a fractional marketing guy, I don't want a guy from P&G who had a $60 million a year budget to, you know, do marketing for Tide.
You want somebody that knows startups.
I want a guy who struggled, you know, I want that guy. So I could go into your system, your platform.
It's a great idea. The truth is, the reason why I don't have a lot of connections with places like that is because that's not the kind of world I grew up in entrepreneurially. I grew up in, like I told you before, I grew up entrepreneurially in a founder-led startup. I grew up in the world of companies that grew organically over many years. Maybe they're 10, 20, 30 years old, even the companies. And, you know, this kind of like funded Series A, Series B, Silicon Valley, angel investor kind of world, I didn't grow up in entrepreneurially, because I'm not very connected there. I'm more connected to the, you know, like I said, the organically grown type of companies, small and mid-size. So that's more where I came from. And so that's more the relationships I have. But definitely, I mean, you know, you want to make some introductions or connect me in that space a little bit.
Yeah.
Some connections there, but not a lot. So,
yeah.
Well, I'm from Nashville, by the way, just a little bit south of you guys.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I live in Long Island, New York now, but I'm from Nashville.
Oh, you're from Nashville? How long did you live there? Because you got a very much of a New York delivery.
Yeah, I'm a fast talker. I think I was always like that. I mean, I was born in Charleston, South Carolina, lived in Nashville since I was 2 till I graduated high school, went to college in New York, met my wife up here, and basically stayed. So,
yeah, one of my co-founders in a company that we just started, he's in Oyster Bay.
Yeah, all right, it's out in Long Island. Yes, I'm a little further west in Long Island, right by the Queens, right by the New York City border, basically.
Yeah, the Rich family in Gilligan's Island was from Oyster Bay, so we always give Sandy a hard time about living in Oyster Bay. Well, like Oyster Bay. Great Gatsby was
based there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe. You know, Great Gatsby was based on a guy from Price Hill, a bootlegger.
Little Egg, Long Islanders. I don't even know if that's a real place, but it was something called Little Egg, right?
Oh, yeah, maybe like a street. Great Gatsby? Yeah, it's probably some like a street or like something, you know.
Was it George Remus?
George Remus, yeah, it was based on his life.
Gatsby was based on
George Remus.
Yeah, but Gatsby's played by like guys like Robert Redford and Brad Pitt.
Gatsby was Remus not that. Wasn't Brad Remus Pitt. Was not that. No.
Leonardo DiCaprio played him. Right?
That's right. Yeah, Leonardo exactly. DiCaprio, Leonardo DiCaprio. Not Brad Pitt. It was the first one was Robert Redford, and then the remake was Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio, that's right.
Yeah, George Remus doesn't look anything like those guys.
No, but there
George
is a whiskey.
Remus looks like me.
There is a whiskey named after him that my friends co-founded. So
yeah. Well, he was a good.
Well, such thing. I actually tell you another little bit of trivia is, you know, my name is Ben Wolf, and I told you I was at that startup in Long Island. So another Leonardo DiCaprio movie is Wolf of Wall Street. So there's a little Wolf connection there. But the original Wolf of Wall Street took place, the office building where all the events in that movie took place, were in the same building that my company was in Long Island. We were that startup I told you about. Was in this office building in Marcus Avenue in Lake Success,
interesting,
York, Long Island. That's where Wolf of Wall Street took place.
Well, and then speaking of real estate, my real estate attorney's name is Ben Wolf. The Kentucky, really? He's the Kentucky Ben Wolf. Yep,
I'm the Nashville one.
So. Yeah, you're the when I saw you on my calendar, I was like, Ben Wolf. What the heck's he going to come on weird. The podcast for? Like,
hey, why is
why he just call me?
Why did he just call me? Like, it didn't have to podcast. Yeah, so the funny thing is too. So I own a digital ad agency, and we've been virtual. Like I don't have, you know, I have some employees, but I don't have many full time employees. Most of the people I kind of build teams around projects, because what's the sense of having having a Java developer here if I get a bunch of PHP work, or having a PHP guy and then he can't do the Java work or whatever, right? Yeah, so you have to build custom teams, especially in technology. Right. And the customers, I think, that do the best with us, we kind of go after old, established, like you said, manufacturing companies. So we want to go after those manufacturing companies that, you know, grandpa started, you know, 150 years ago, you know, dad ran it. Now the son's running it. The son's like, hey, we need to do digital marketing, because grandpa, he just went to the Elks Club and that's how he got business. He, you know, his old war buddies, there's golfing friends. Like, you don't do that anymore. It's all, you know, it's on Google now. Right. So have you ever had to deal with something like that, where you've got this generational ownership in these companies and they don't know the first thing when it comes to us? They don't know the first thing about marketing. They're all sales. Every one of them sales. They try to put a sales guy into a marketing position and it doesn't work.
Well, not even old guys. Like till today, he would have come up to me at my business and say, hey man, I can help you out. You guys need a CFO and you guys don't have the money to afford a full-time CFO. How about you do fractionalized ownership? And I would look at him like, what?
Mm. Yeah.
So it's not just old people.
But they, I mean, essentially, old, we've been doing it though. You know what I mean? Like we've been doing it. We're saying, hey, outsource your marketing to us. We'll essentially be your marketing department.
I get it. What I'm saying is that this fractionalized ownership, it's a newish idea that a lot of people aren't, their brains aren't wrapped around yet.
Especially manufacturing guys.
Yes.
Like those kind of guys that are like, hey, we have to hire someone. You know, they have to be here. I have to be able to walk over to their desk and talk to them. But that's not necessarily a thing. And honestly, Ben, it doesn't have to be one person. Like, I don't have to hire a fractional CMO. I could hire a business that works as my department. And then that person, whoever's running that or whoever's in that company, they can go out and find the talent that's necessary. But I could come in as a company, not necessarily just an individual. Right. Like, I mean, you could start, you could grow this.
You have a lot of models here, right? I mean, there's a few things come to mind from what you guys are talking about. I mean, one is, I know, let's say for the CFO example. So some CFOs come in purely as a CFO. Like, all I do is the strategic part, you know, is the leadership part. There's other CFO companies that come in that they actually have a whole bookkeeping and controller part of their business, a whole bunch of non-CFOs that also work there, and they could provide that service too. So they could do your books, they could do your, you know, your controller, your AR, AP, you know, payroll, et cetera. They give you your whole finance function and your CFO role. And so maybe they have one person that's a CFO and other people or a team that are doing the other parts of it. Same thing with CMO. Yeah. I mean, you could have people providing the tactical elements. I actually have one client that retained a fractional CMO, and part of their retention is that they hire, because this particular company actually happens to not have anybody in marketing in the company, even at a tactical level, even at a, you know, at a very administrative level. And so they got the fractional CMO company. They made that an option. They actually provide the tactical work, you know, the posting and whatever, just like kind of the technical stuff. And they do that in addition to the CMO role and, you know, the actual marketing messaging and strategy and all that stuff. And look, with a marketing firm, you could offer a CMO service, but you know, I just have to be careful, at least in my view, just that you really have one person that owns and takes responsibility for the marketing function of the business. Now, maybe the tactics and the work are also being done by your team or a team that you found, but it's really taking responsibility for it, because very often. Mm-hmm. You know, very often a lot of marketing agencies I've found are very like, okay, we agree on certain tasks that we've got to get done. And maybe the task is also create a strategy, create a plan, and then, you know, whatever. And then, you know, post your social media or whatever, you know, et cetera, all the different tactical elements of that. But just to make sure that on an ongoing basis, that if somebody owns the entire strategy and the execution, yeah, I mean, that's certainly.
Well, I'm thinking about scale. Do that. So what if I wanted to, okay, so I start out, I'm like, hey, I've been working at this 9-to-5. I got tons of experience, 20 years under my belt. You know, I'm going to be a fractional CFO. But then you can scale that. That's not like you don't have to just be the only one doing
it.
Yeah,
that's what he's talking
yeah.
about. When he was looking it up, he said there were actual companies that were.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking if I'm listening.
Even for myself as a fractional COO or fractional integrator, as we call it, at the beginning, I was doing it as a solopreneur. You know, I'm doing working for this client, working for that client. And eventually I keep getting leads. I keep getting more attention. People are asking me for help. And so I just, you know, once I'm full, I just keep, you know, just start referring that out to other fractional COOs. And at some point I'm like, you know what? Like, I think I really got something good with the process that I have and my, you know, the way I'm doing this with my clients and what I've learned from this process. I could actually, instead of just referring this to other people, I could actually help those clients myself and make my business into a firm. Not just a solo practitioner, not just a solopreneurship. So now I have two other fractional integrators, two or three kind of waiting in the wings that are working under me. Now I have a number of clients way beyond what I could serve individually. So yeah, I turn that into a firm. You know, and like you guys, like the example you said with a CMO. Yes, if I'm a CMO, I could have other tactical marketing people under me and make money off of their work too. And so, you know, increase the size of my business and what I'm able to achieve that way. Or I could bring in other CMOs and have them work under me, develop a proven process, kind of work as a team so that none of us are on an island. One of the challenges, if you are doing work, let's say you're doing a side hustle as a CTO, right? I run a product team at a company, and then I have a CTO gig on the side. The issue is though that I'm like on an island. I'm by myself. If I have issues, if I have challenges, one of the challenges you have as a solopreneur, as a C-level solopreneur, or maybe it's any kind of solopreneur, is that you're on an island in many ways, and it's very lonely. And it's kind of hard to know who to go to when you have challenges that come up, or your client gets upset, or there's an issue, or you're not sure how to handle something, or you come across a situation you haven't seen before. When you're part of a team, or like we do with my fractional COO team that I have at my other company, is that we can solve each other's issues together, right? We're not on an island. If I have an issue, if my client's upset about something, or if I come across an issue I'm not familiar with, I can bring it to the team. We have a regular meeting every week specifically for that purpose. And, you know, get there, you know, what's your experience on this? You know, what have you done in this situation before? And all of us have found that extremely valuable. I mean, we all think that we're much more value to our clients because of what we're getting from each other and what we're then able to pass on to our clients than what we could do if we're on our own. So it's a challenge. You know, a lot of people do it as solo. I did it as solo. It's, you know, still a huge value for the client, but you know, there is definitely something to be said for being part of a team. and not being on an island and with the loneliness that, that comes with that.
I kind of want to start a Cincinnati branch.
Yeah.
I would love to be a fractional COO. So many inefficiencies.
You could be fractional sales leadership type person.
Fractional ass kicker. A lot
of people do that. There's even a couple of franchises and licensed companies that do fractional sales management. There's one called Sales QB that gives kind of a licensed system that sales manager, fractional sales managers use. There's another one called Sales Acceleration. They probably have over 100 fractional sales managers across the country, part of Sales Acceleration. They were just actually bought by a hedge fund.
Oh.
But there's some cool stuff that you could do. I mean,
well, what about so I get these emails from people that want to pay me, and I'm they keep sending these things. Pay me to be a board member.
Well, I don't get any of that mail.
Oh. I've seen those on LinkedIn.
Yeah, do you see those? Like, is this
on LinkedIn? I don't know. I'd see these like, hey, we need board Z or boardy or something.
Yeah, but I think it's in the same world. It's kind of in the same thing because
I don't know.
Yeah, you do quarterly, like they pay you, like these board seats are paid. You do quarterly meetings. You got to have
advice once a quarter.
Just give advice. Yeah. Yeah. Some of them are once a month, but
well, if anybody's listening, I'd gladly give you advice for money once a quarter.
Well, there's also some where you've
never done that. I don't know. Maybe I should try it once just to see like, how does it work?
Well, there's some that you do for free, right? Where you don't get paid for it, but yeah, you do it so that you can get it on your resume for some of these, the vast majority, I would say. But if you're, Ben Wolf and you've got this great experience and, corporate and you've turned companies around or got them off the ground and they've done really well, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who would be like, yeah, I need him on my board.
Yeah.
But possible side hustle, Ben. You never know.
Yeah, there you go. Like a side hustle to a side hustle.
Well, no, you are a side hustler, though. Like this is a side. I mean, your book is a side hustle.
But I made it full time, right? I have two companies now, right? I got one fractional COO firm and this fractional leadership, referral platform. So I got two businesses there. I don't know. I mean, I guess neither one is full time. But
what's the minimum amount of businesses you need in order to survive in Long Island? I mean, with the pizza, like $24
approximately 13.
I know you need at least 13.
Bringing in about 175,000.
Ben might have a paper route too on top of all this. Like,
cuts grass.
I know the electric keeps going up.
Cuts grass and does affiliate marketing when he has time.
I know my poor friend Sandy, man. It's like it's just like everything's going up.
Taxes. You got to understand who you're talking to here. Like we are from Cincinnati.
He's from Nashville. He knows how cheap we are.
Yeah, but that was a long time ago. Listen to him talk. He's New York now.
You're so insulting right now.
He just drank a Diet Coke. That's not a bourbon he's drinking or a champagne over here.
Manhattan.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, people can't say it. He's just a normal guy. So, I mean, he comes from Tennessee. That's kind of our people.
I could talk like that for a little bit.
There you go. You got a little Appalachian blood flowing through there, I'm sure.
I think in my bar mitzvah video, I had a southern accent, but I don't know. I lost it after that.
Oh, there you go. Well,
harken back to the tougher times in your life. The things here don't cost that much. So, like, for us, everything we hear about New York is just like, Jesus Christ.
I know. You go to New York, you're like, for what? For a taxi?
My cousin had...
Well, in Nashville, the houses are more expensive than where I live in Long Island.
I know. It's gotten crazy. You should have invested back in high school. You'd be...
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you wouldn't even be working
right now. My parents bought their house in 1977, so it's worth a lot now. It's near Vanderbilt.
Are they still live there?
Yeah.
Oh, that Vandy's nice.
Oh, good for them. Yeah, Vandy has the best Starbucks on their campus. So I, for a while there, I was bouncing around the I'd go different places around the country, but I'd have to bring my laptop with me because, again, I run an ad agency. So I'm constantly working and I was always looking for a Starbucks. Vanderbilt.
That's a co-working space.
It's great. Between Vanderbilt, the Starbucks on Vanderbilt's campus and the Starbucks on UCLA's campus. I'm not sure which one I like more. It's probably the Vanderbilt one because they had more plugs. Everywhere.
Does it have to be does it have to be Starbucks?
I was just like, it was easy to find.
There's this apartment community in Marietta, Georgia that sits right on the Chattahoochee, and they've got this gigantic drug place. It'd be even better if they had drugs, but it was a big coffee house, and it had like this wraparound porch. It's like a 3-story coffee house.
What?
Yeah. Oh, wow. And that sounds cool.
Yeah, that was pretty badass.
That sounds awesome. Make it an experience.
Yeah.
You know, you got to make it an experience.
All right, that's what Starbucks did. Yeah, no, that's a great idea. One thing you guys brought up before, I think, is like people do feel like you got to be, if you're not walking the halls, if you're not standing on the same carpet with people, like how do you manage people? How do you manage processes or functions or whole departments of a company? And it is a challenge. One of the things I do talk about in the book, Fractional Leadership, is how you decide if it's for you or not. And one of the things I talk about is like one of the signs really that I've seen just from experience is that if people already have at least one member of the leadership team that's not in the same place as everybody else, then they're much more likely to be open to it and for it to work. But if there's a really, really strong culture of just like everybody has to be in person, and you know, then unless you really believe in it and there's a lot of buy-in about why we want to make this work virtually, you know, if you could find it. Also, a lot of fractional, I work with my, I'm at a client's office right now, by the way. I don't know if you see my background here. I'm at a client's office now. I work with 2 clients in person. But very often, most often, it is virtual. And if you can't find somebody fractionally, locally, that's the right fit, and honestly, what's the chances, right? Because you have a 3,000-mile-wide country. What are the chances that you know the right fit fractional leader with the right industry experience and budget and good fit for you core values-wise is going to also happen to be within 10 miles like of your home base? Not necessarily that statistically likely. So if you can't find somebody in person, and then just a very strong in-person culture, you just have to decide, you know, how much are we suffering from not having, you know, been there, done that, experienced, right fit person in this role? You know, is it going to take us a couple more years to kind of reinvent the wheel and kind of grind away, you know, without that experience until we could just hire someone full time because we just can only do full time? Or are we going to, you know, or do we want to, is it worth it enough to us to find a way to make it work? Start doing our leadership team meetings on Zoom, even though 4 out of the 5 members of the team are in the same building. We all just do it in our offices, right? So that we can all have an effective Zoom meeting because we're bought into this process. You know, with a, you know, you can have in-person visits here and there also, even with somebody that's mainly virtual. But
I feel like talent pools in different cities. Like here, you throw a rock and you hit a marketing person. I mean, you know, marketing was invented by P&G, and P&G's here, you know, and soap operas, they created soap operas to sell their soap.
Yeah.
And there's marketing people everywhere here. Small marketing agencies, big marketing agencies. They're all here. Yeah, they're the second largest advertiser in the world. They spend money.
If everybody is very in person, and you could find the right person locally, fractionally, obviously, then that's the ideal solution. Of course.
Well, I think so, but I think you can also, you're like, oh, well, everybody's got this. Like, if I'm working in marketing and I'm here in Cincinnati, I'm like, oh, everybody's got a marketing person. Oh, marketing people are everywhere, but no, they're not. Like, I think if you're somebody who has a skill set and you're thinking about this, you can kind of think, oh, the industry's flooded. Nobody's, because of where you are. But, you know, if I go to Omaha, Nebraska, they might need marketing people in Omaha, Nebraska. They might have a lot of good CFOs for whatever reason, because, you know, Warren Buffett's there and everybody decided to flood into Omaha or something. But they may not have any marketing people, right? So, you know, I think, Ben, your system, this thing you created, allows people. It's almost like a, let me dip my toe in and see.
Now with the pandemic and people having worked from home and doing, you know, having done Zoom for all their calls, I think people are much more accepting of this idea of having a fractionalized ownership person.
Leadership.
Yeah, actually, sorry, yeah. Fractionalized. See, I get my book confused too. I'm sorry. The fractionalized leadership is a, you know, you got your part, your fractionalized CFO that's not here. You've become accustomed not having employees there when you have your meetings. It's killing type A personalities, I'm sure. Like, this has been a major adjustment for guys that have to have their hands on top of everything. But I think that this is great.
It's actually a good thing in a way, because people, a lot of times, what I've also seen is that people have been able to cover up like bad people, not bad people like morally, but like, you know, ineffective people or people who don't have a lot of ownership for their work or attention to detail, people have been able to cover that up by helicopter management because they're on top of everything all the time and they're able to make sure everything gets done right. So they're able to paper over and cover up and conceal weakness in people on their teams. And what the pandemic did by forcing everybody for at least a few months to work virtually is it took away that helicopter management and it made the separation. I think Warren Buffett is the one that said that, you know, what happens when the tide goes out is you see who's swimming naked. And when people stopped having that helicopter management to kind of be the water that covers up everything,
yeah,
you don't really know what's happening. And that gets taken away. You see who's swimming naked and who's ineffective. And so a lot of people got laid off. A lot of people got let go because it became clear that they were just being covered up by how bad they were. And also bad managers are being covered up by the fact that they're like, they were just covering up their lack of any processes, lack of good management by just hovering all the time, being a helicopter manager. And that was covering up what a bad manager they were. And then when they weren't hovering anymore, their performance of their team and i.e. their management results became apparent. It became apparent that they were swimming naked. And so they lost out as managers. But I definitely agree, Kyle, with what you're saying about what COVID did. I talk about this in the book also, that I think the reason why I've really seen fractional leadership, and everybody else I speak with has really seen, who's in this space, has seen a lot more attention, a lot more leads, a lot more opportunities coming up after COVID. And I think there's really three things going on, is that at the same time, you know, I started really exploding with me about May or June 2020. It just went crazy. Because I think when the shock kind of wore off of the lockdowns and the pandemic and everything, and about 2 or 3 months in, people were like, okay, we can't just sit here in frozen mode forever. So, you know, we got to like do something with this business. And so they started wanting to grow again. And, you know, and then people were like, you know what? I never could have imagined working with people except for in person. But now I had no choice. We had to work with people, even in the C-suite, virtually for at least a couple, 3 months, if not more. And, you know, some people said, I still hate it. And a lot of people said, you know what? It wasn't as bad as I thought. Actually, it was all right. And now I'm not limited by those people that happen to be within 10 miles of my home base.
Yeah.
You know, let's just even full-time. I mean, full-time, fractional, whatever. Like, it just opens up so many more opportunities when I'm not bound in by this artificial geographical boundary around where we live or on commutable distance.
Well, you're in New York too. Just imagine going into the office every day, the traffic. I mean, if you're lucky enough to, you know, take the subway, depending on where you're taking this. I mean, you could be taking the subway from Connecticut into the city or whatever. And you're, it's just crazy. Like
when I worked in a law firm, it was an hour and 10 minutes each way door to door between the train and the
walk
down and Manhattan. And yeah, it was such a waste. And I even asked them, like, you know, again, it was between 2010, 2015 when I was at the firm. We could all work virtually. I mean, the whole time I was there. And of course, on weekends we did. But, you know, even during the week, I would ask, like, hey, one day a week, can I, you know, I'm losing like 3 hours of time from this commute. I could be billing. Imagine how much more money the firm could make.
Exactly.
How much more work has been done. If I could just bill, you know, starting at 8:30 instead of starting at 10 a.m. every day. And, you know, and then, you know, whatever. There was just such a FaceTime culture that you just suffer too much in your reputation if you try to do that. So you learn not to do it. But now it's a different world.
It's a different world.
I had a friend that didn't show up for the New York Giants. He was signed as an undrafted free agent by the Giants. He didn't show up for the first training camps and practices. He didn't show up for the first season. He was under contract.
And because of COVID?
No, not because of COVID. Because he hated New York so much. So I said, isn't everything in New Jersey? He goes, it doesn't matter. It's all the same. You don't understand how terrible it is. Now, he went back and he was on the Super Bowl team the year they beat the Patriots when they were undefeated.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah. Like, you still have a job. Like, you can't just that, not well, go.
He got a sales job, and he was just like, I can't do it. I can't go to New York.
Sales job. Oh, I thought you were saying he was on the team playing.
No. He was on the team. He was a backup. Oh. He was a backup quarterback to Eli Manning. He hated his.
You talking about Jared Lorenzen?
Yeah.
Jared Lorenzen. Like, yeah.
Jared, what are you doing?
Well,
I don't understand.
Have you guys, there's a book that just came out called Bullshit Jobs or something like that. I can't know if that's the exact title, but it talks about how over the years, companies have just added layers and layers and layers of middle management just to say they're growing. And these people, these jobs are pretty much pointless. And it goes, there's more.
It's called the federal government. But
it's called the federal government. Yeah. Yeah. But
what about profit, though?
I don't know. Yeah. It's so weird. Like, I
just raise prices.
Isn't profit important?
Yeah. I haven't read the book.
Profit's more important than top line growth, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I haven't read the book, but it's pretty interesting. I mean, it's a different look on things. I always like those books that kind of like change the way you look at things. Like, you start taking things for granted and you start thinking, oh, yeah, this is just the way it is. And then somebody comes in and just like flips things and says, hey, well, what about this?
Well, you just need new ammo for your Facebook arguments.
Yeah, I do need I argue on Facebook a lot. I was up till 3 a.m. last night arguing with people on how printing money actually increases inflation. But well,
Adam was 4 signatures short of being a mayoral candidate for the city of Cincinnati.
Yeah, we had 2 weeks to get. There was a blizzard.
We're in the path of Jerry Springer, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Without the checkbook situation. Hopefully.
Yeah. Go cash. Straight cash money. Homie.
Straight cash. Yeah. Bitcoin.
But you seriously got signatures to run for mayor?
Yeah.
Recruited.
Well, the problem in Cincinnati is it's like all the neighborhoods are very. When you look at Cincinnati's population, it's very deceptive. It says like 350,000 people. Well, there's 3 million people in the metro.
Right.
They don't talk about it. Like, it's because half of our city's in another state. It's in Kentucky and it doesn't count towards Cincinnati. Part of it's in Indiana because we're right here in the corner of these three states. And the problem is I can't, if I'm running for mayor of Cincinnati, out of those 3 million people, I've got 300 something thousand people I can get signatures from. And most of them live in townships. It could be smack dab in the middle of the city of Cincinnati, but be a separate city.
Yeah, Norwood.
Like Norwood. Yeah, Norwood's got like 30,000 people, but it's not technically part of Cincinnati. So I can't get signatures from them. But if those people show up at the Kroger in the neighborhood next door, they still pay city of Cincinnati school taxes, believe it or not. But they think that they live in the city of Cincinnati. They're like, oh, I pay school taxes. I must live. So they sign it. So you got to get 1,000 signatures in order to end up with 500 to get on the ballot.
Uh-huh.
So I tried to do it during a blizzard, during COVID, in December last year.
Wow.
In 2 weeks. Me and my poor wife, I dragged her out. So we had enough signatures. It's just it came down to 4 and they didn't want to count them.
They weren't technically qualified.
Yeah. These were qualified. They didn't check them the right way. And they refused to do it because they already had 6 candidates and they didn't feel like they needed another one. So I had to take it to the board and they decided to not allow me. But, you know, it is what it is. It's politics, right? And but yeah, so Ben, tell us more about where people go again, you know, to close things out. You know, what's the website, the name of the book again, and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so check out fractionalleadership.io. You can, you know, obviously learn what fractional leadership is. There's, you know, there's a blog where there's regular articles, newsletter, podcasts, win-win entrepreneurial community over there. The book is Fractional Leadership, Landing Executive Talent You Thought Was Out of Reach. You get it on Amazon. It's a hardcover, Kindle, softcover. It's going to be on Audible in about 5 weeks. I don't know when this is going live, but it's going on Audible in the next few weeks as well.
Yeah, you'll be on Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. Also pretty soon. So in a few weeks, it'll be on Audible and that's where you can check it out. Fractionalleadership.io. I can learn about it. You also request a fractional leader if you need one for a business or request to join the network if you're a fractional leader.
And does that also help people who want to be fractional leaders?
This is a great question. Actually, we're working on some stuff like that. There's a great website with a learning portal called Voyager U. It's actually spelled Voyager,
fancy.
Whatever.
He has been, see, he's been in New York for a while.
He's been fancy. Speaking
accents and everything.
I know, look at that.
He's fancy. I'm all fancy.
He's got the country accent. He's got the New York accent. Now he's got the French accent.
He went back to the Nashville one.
I know. He's just eating well, man. Look at this.
Voyager U, there's like a platform. You can get a lot of training on like, hey, how do you set up a business? How do you go fractional if you're full-time? You know, basically, how do you go independent? There's another podcast called Going Solo by David Schreiner Khan. He has a website, smashingtheplateau.com. You can learn about going solo there. I may be offering and adding a lot of these resources into fractionalleadership.io, but I haven't done it yet.
Now, like when you go to fractionalleadership.io, if you're, say, you're a startup in Cincinnati, I'm thinking, not me as a friend, like we, you know, people always say, asking for a friend. No, I'm legitimately asking for a friend who's starting a company.
Right.
I just sent him a text message in the middle of our, this whole thing to say, hey, remind me to talk to you about this.
Yeah.
When you go there, are most of the guys based out of like New York, or do you have national people?
No, it's all over. Actually, it's interesting. I was talking, we have one member, we have one fractional leader, fractional sales manager and marketing person based out of Hawaii, actually.
Oh, wow.
I was talking to her the other day. And while we were talking, I was like, you know what? Let me download all the zip codes. Let me do one of these like maps to see like, where are our fractional leaders? Right. And we're actually over the whole country. It's definitely in the eastern third of the United States, definitely is like a larger concentration. We are all across the United, we have people all across the United States, including Hawaii, actually, for a CFO and a sales manager. Well, there's not that many in Hawaii, but you know, across the United States, California, Portland, you know, Denver, you know, around Nashville, all over the Midwest, Chicago, New York, Florida, you know, up and down the coast. Cary, North Carolina, you know, all over the place we have people.
I love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, good job, Ben. This is awesome.
Thank you.
Well, you're the first person, the first side hustler that's come on here talking about this. Yeah, so,
we talked about this the other day at work. You learn something new every day. I learned that New Hampshire, actually a shoreline. Didn't know that. Been in logistics for 20 years. Sorry to say. New Hampshire has coastline. Learned that. Now I learned what fractionalized leadership is. I mean, I'm having a hell of a week.
Nice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome.
Even just today, actually, we got a request from a logistics company in Dallas, actually, for a fractional COO. Just got a request came in today for a referral. So
non-compete.
You know,
non-compete. He's got this non-compete, Ben. Oh, man, he could do it. But he just threw the non-compete out there. I looked at him and he's like, non-compete. you'd be great, Kyle.
Appreciate you guys having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Ben. Thanks for coming on. Yeah, and
day before Thanksgiving, give us an hour. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
My pleasure.
Awesome.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
People will check it out, and you have a great Thanksgiving, Ben, and enjoy it.
Thanks. Talk to y'all later.
Thank you, sir.
Later. Bye.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guests. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there. And we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.